To understand more about the way we think of ourselves as human beings, it's really important to understand the mind-body complex and how ideas about it came about. If we don't understand that, then we get lost in a sea of conventional descriptions about ourselves. We get lost in a sea of descriptions that are part of the culture in which we live, and we learn these descriptions from our family of origin, and then as we grow older, from the rest of society as well. And for most of us, we take ourselves to be those descriptions. So what we take to be true about ourselves as human being is based, as human beings, is based upon descriptions rather than our own direct experience of what it means to be human. And this is a very key distinction. We are facing a time in the culture of humankind where we must evolve. The mind-body complex of human beings must evolve. It must leap over these conventional descriptions about what it takes itself to be and begin looking at itself in a new way. Without that, the species is in danger of dwindling and becoming extinct. So this is something we already see. Species become extinct because they can no longer thrive. And for humankind to thrive, it will require that we solve what are currently unsolvable problems. And those unsolvable problems cannot be solved with the thinking that created them. So the thinking and actions that created these problems cannot solve these problems. Thus, this evolutionary leap in the human body-mind complex is required to move forward. Much of what we take ourselves to be isn't even based on current ideas or descriptions or things that we know about ourselves. Most of what we take ourselves to be is based on very old descriptions of what a human being is about. And some of these descriptions in the East are that human beings are ruled by reincarnation and karma, and in the West that human beings are ruled by original sin, heaven and hell. So it's under the albatross of these ancient descriptions of what it means to be human that many people have a subtle operating system that is based on these concepts. And what that means is that for most people look at their life as a project of trying to make themselves better, trying to make themselves into a better somebody, into a better person, less of a sinner, less of a person who's swayed by karmic influences. So you see, even though we may never even talk about karma in our lives if we live in the East, or sin if we live in the West, and we think, oh, we're beyond such things, these still rule every single thing about our society. These concepts are extremely pervasive. And when human beings see themselves in this weak-kneed fashion as a work in progress, somebody who constantly needs to have some attention paid to them so they don't go absolutely wild and pell-mell with some kind of unseen influence within themselves, well, this leads to a life of total inner chaos for most people, of never really being able to feel satisfied and fulfilled. And then that lack of inner satisfaction and fulfillment plays itself out in relationships between people, whether it's on a small scale level, such as one-to-one relationships, family relationships, community relationships, or a larger scale, nations and the world. So these very simple distinctions are absolutely pivotal. The functioning of the human mind is extremely simple, and it is something that every human being experiences. So there's no human being anywhere who does not have a direct experience of their own mind. This has always been true, and it always will be true. Even as the mind evolves, there will still be that direct experience of the mind. And it's in that direct experience of the mind that everything about life is known. So it's through the mind that everything about life is known. Everything we take ourselves to be, everything we take other people to be, everything we take our world to be. All this is known through the mind. It could not be known without the mind. So in this sense, we can legitimately say that the mind is the root of everything. It's the root of all perceptions, no matter what they are. Even though it may seem that appearances are outside ourselves, perceptions are outside our body, without our mind, we wouldn't be having that perception. So the mind for each human being is the root of all perceptions, whether they're inner or outer. Now, for many millennia, most human beings have dealt with their mind, handled their mind in a certain way. And this is the way that we need to go beyond. So we need to move beyond the current way that most people use their mind into a much broader scope of what the mind is. In a simple way, we could look at the mind as having two modes. One is active and one is inactive. And the active one is thinking, describing emotions and sensations, describing all kinds of appearances. And the other mode is non-conceptual. It doesn't have any thinking. So these are the two modes of the mind. And this is where most human beings today are locked in. Not all human beings. There are a few people who have moved beyond those modes of mind. Not many, but there are some who have moved beyond those modes of mind. And there always have been throughout human history people who have moved beyond the modes of mind. Now, the technology for moving beyond the modes of mind is already complete in human culture. We already have the instruction manual. We already have the operating manual on how to move beyond the mind. However, due to the way in which these operating instructions have been handed down, they are not available to most people. So it limits the number of people who can move beyond the mind when the instructions for doing so aren't available. However, today, for the first time in human history, those instructions are available. And they're available right here in the Great Freedom Teaching. The precise instructions that have been handed down for thousands of years from one generation of humankind to another, these authentic instructions that unerringly move lots of people at once, hundreds of thousands, millions of people beyond the scope of mind. Why do we want to do this? Why do we want to move beyond the scope of mind? When we are involved in either our active mind or our inactive mind, we have usually an obsessive preoccupation with that. In terms of our own well-being, we want to keep everything in our mind kind of calm down and at bay so we can have a somewhat comfortable life. But when we live in that way, our focus is always on an individual self. The individual self is primary. Taking care of the needs of the individual self and making sure that the individual self has enough well-being to cope in different environments becomes the project of our lives. And this we could call conventional ways of being. So conventional being, the conventional way of using the mind. Now, the mind and its active and inactive modes, these would not be were it not for human awareness. So it's human awareness itself, that which is aware of these two modes of mind, that is that about mind which is beyond mind. Do you understand what I'm saying? Awareness is all-encompassing. Without awareness, we would have no way to know that we're naturally here, that we're present, but we are. It's only through awareness that we know we are. It's only through awareness that we know our mind is. It's only through awareness that we know our body is. So mind is the ruler. Mind is the ruler of all. Without awareness and the operating of the mind, we wouldn't know anything about ourselves. We wouldn't even know that we are. We'd be a corpse without awareness. So awareness is the key to complete release from the activity of the mind. And in awareness, what we find is our wisdom ruler. This is a wisdom ruler within us that is completely beyond mind and that goes about life in an entirely different way than a conventional mind. A conventional mind with all its trials and tribulations that live out a life of some happiness, some regrets, most in kind of a neutral state. This has completely gone beyond in the wisdom ruler of awareness. The wisdom ruler of awareness we could call the wisdom body. So in one case we have the conventional body and mind, in another case we have the wisdom body and mind. And all this is within us, it's already accomplished, but we cannot tap into that wisdom ruler and be empowered by it without getting acquainted with awareness. It's impossible. The constant frenetic activity of the mind can never tap into wisdom. It might tap into some conventional kinds of folk wisdom once in a while, but wisdom will not be pervasive of the life. The other importance of the wisdom body and mind is that its preoccupation is the benefit of the whole. Its preoccupation is the benefit of the whole, not the obsessive concern with self. So I'm sure it's becoming very clear to everyone why it is so important to become familiar with awareness and its capacity to benefit the whole rather than to stay lost in the conventional descriptions of the mind. The conventional ways of thinking can only take us so far. Even though we may have all kinds of wonderful inventions in our world today, these inventions are based on the growth of the inventions themselves. So science is based on the forwarding of science itself. It doesn't have the wisdom context of being for the benefit of the whole. Science develops based on science itself rather than on science as it will be of benefit to the whole. So you see, these are very, very key issues. And I travel the world with this message, and people on all continents are very excited about it and forming communities really committed to wisdom awareness as the next step. Now, today I'm in the U.S., I'm giving a talk, and in the U.S. of all countries, there is the least interest in this topic. So there is the least interest in this topic for several important reasons. One is that many people in the U.S. are not aware of the immense suffering of most of the world's people, and in the U.S., there are many comforts and conveniences, so it's less likely that people want to change anything as long as they're feeling comfortable. Whereas in other countries, there's a lot of discomfort. People who don't have food in their bellies, like 85% of the world's people, and people facing all kinds of wars or tribal conflicts or civil unrest or whatever it is, are much more moved to participate in something that can really change things. When people have seen the violence of the conventional mind firsthand, people who live all over the world, Asia, Africa, the Middle East, even in the West and Europe, these are lands where many people can recall wars being fought on their turf during their lifetime. So when there is that firsthand experience of atrocities, the atrocities of what human beings do to each other and the planet, then it's much more likely that people will take action to evolve. And the importance of this is that it makes each one of us a participant in that change. Each one of us within ourselves has to come in contact with that direct experience of our awareness as the root of every perception. And the way we do that is that when a perception comes up that we would have built an elaboration or fabrication upon, so a perception comes up, a memory, say, for example, a memory from childhood. And usually when we have this memory from childhood, it's unbidden. We didn't really even mean to have it, because that's the way the active mind is. There's no way to control it. It's completely unpredictable. And so the memory comes up, and right away it bleeds out into a lot of other memories. So, and then this happened and that happened, and then my mother did this and my father did that, or but my dad left, or my mom left, or my dad got drunk, or my mother got drunk, or whatever it might be. And then this caused an effect on me, and it caused an effect on my siblings, and on and on and on. So, you know, we have these memories just as an example, and then all the stories that bleed out from them. But when these memories come up, and we just come to a complete stop, not going into the memory at all, not either indulging or renouncing it, so we're not repressing it. We're just saying, well, you know, this memory has its root in awareness. It has no independent origin of awareness, other than awareness. But what I choose to focus on is awareness rather than the perception. I'm going to find that wisdom ruler within me. I'm going to find my true wisdom mind, my stainless mind, the mind that has never had anything in it that needed to be fixed. And there I'm going to stay put. I'm going to maintain that, and I'm going to do that no matter what happens. No matter how long I live my life, I'll never give up on that. So when one does that, then sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, one will be able to stay in that wisdom awareness without trying to do so. So at first we have to, when perceptions arise, we come to a complete stop and just allow the resting awareness to be the case, to be as it is. It's already accomplished, so we don't need to do anything to get it. We refuse to buy into the conventional way of doing things. Just because everyone else wants to dribble away the use of their mind in other ways, that's all right. More and more people are taking up the mantle of really wanting to understand the wisdom in their own mind that is rooted in awareness. It's the sublime secret, the treasure of human living, completely beyond causality. So it doesn't buy into concepts such as right and wrong, positive and negative, good and bad. It doesn't have any need for that kind of thing. Its wisdom comes from the deeply embedded heart essence of what it means to be human. It doesn't need to rely on the paltry descriptions of convention. Those don't mean anything to the wisdom mind. All they are appearances of itself, but they're nothing to base a life on. So, you see, when we get in touch with that part of us, we could say that we get in touch with our truly revolutionary and radical nature, because it's that isn't realized by most people who are living today. And when we do so, our life becomes super complete in itself. The more that we base ourselves in awareness rather than in all the activity of the mind, all the appearances and the stories we've been telling about them, the more settled we feel inside. We feel naturally settled, and we feel in command, but in a way that has no pride. So this is the wisdom ruler is completely unlike other rulers who have pride and really take stock a lot in what their opinions or points of view are. The wisdom ruler has no pride. The wisdom ruler lives entirely for the benefit of the whole, including you, because you are the whole. You are part of that whole. So in our own lives, we recognize that the more we maintain awareness, just the better we feel. And soon we realize there's nothing else to do. There is absolutely nothing else to do. Because we can count on having perceptions galore during our lifetime. They're going to keep coming one right after another. There's nothing that's going to stop them. All they are is the dynamic energy of awareness, but they're nothing to invest in. They're absolutely nothing to invest in. There's no satisfaction or well-being whatsoever within them. And to persist in thinking of ourselves as karmically influenced or as sinners who need to be fixed, either of those ways, there's nothing that can be done about those concepts other than to learn about the wisdom within, the wisdom mind that's rooted in awareness. Only can tap into it by getting familiar with awareness. By gaining familiarity with awareness, it's directly tapped into. It's directly and obviously present. And then there isn't such a need to persist in conventional ways of doing things or being. Now, these concepts of karma, the doctrine of karma and also of reincarnation is based on the doctrine of a certain world religion. And that doctrine states that mind is the continuum of being. So that mind is the continuum of being that is beyond past, present, and future. And that individuals have like a track or a certain course within that continuum of being, so that you would have certain karma, and the word karma means activity, that would rule your life, but it wouldn't just be from your life now, but would come from other lives you've lived, and that it's now all of these influences from your past are incarnated now. And in the West, the concept of original sin comes from believing that all human beings, no matter who they are marked. So there's a very small step, a little tiny step from karma to original sin. Original sin is just more all-encompassing. It just says everyone is marked, and everyone constantly has to try to overcome the bad and be good. But in both systems, right and wrong are predominant, except in their very highest teachings. It's right and wrong that are predominant. Now, when we live a life based on that, what happens is that when we're constantly trying to exhaust our faults and perfect our qualities, that's the whole project of the life, the exhaustion of our faults and the perfection of our qualities, and it's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work. It's exhausting, in fact. So as we grow older, we really get tired of this project. And it seems that the only way to perfect qualities comes about through work. But exactly the opposite is really the case. In order to exhaust our faults and perfect our qualities, all we have to do is maintain awareness, which is beyond all concepts of good and bad, including reincarnation, karma, and original sin. All of these perceptions through the dynamic energy of awareness, they occur within all-encompassing awareness. But they have nothing to do with wisdom. They have nothing at all to do with what human beings are today. Today it's much easier to understand ourselves as awareness encompassing all points of view or all perceptions, rather than to say that we have some kind of continuum of mind. You know, things like this, we can't prove them to be true. We really can't prove them to be true. What we can say today, and interestingly enough, this is the same wisdom that has always been passed down for thousands and thousands of years. What science is saying today is that everything is a basic space, and within that space there is no observer and observed. Within all of the authentic instructions for realizing the highest wisdom capacities of being human, exactly the same thing is said. The basic space of phenomena is inseparable from awareness. It's inseparable from awareness. Everything is united therein. It is a super complete power that is always superbly helpful. How is that the case? Well, in awareness is the wish-fulfilling gem. So whatever little play we want to play out, that's what we can play out, whatever it is. If we have our memory from childhood, awareness, the wish-fulfilling gem, we can do anything we want with that. We can make up a story about everything that's ruling us and disempowering us and making it seem like all of that's to blame, or we can come to a complete stop and get to know ourselves as we are, outside all the descriptions that are occurring like sparkles of a firecracker inside awareness. There's no need to pay any attention to them to be effective. Thinking and emotions that appear in the wisdom body, once we grow familiar with it, are of an entirely different quality than the erratic activity of the conventional mind. The thinking and emotions that occur in the fully evident wisdom body are always about the benefit of the whole. They're always about the benefit of the whole. That means every thought that is being had is about the benefit of the whole. Every emotion that is had relates to the benefit of the whole. Now, this is so distinct from the way that most of us operate. It's so entirely distinct, yet our own personal freedom and the freedom of humankind and its capacity to continue to survive is based on this. We learn that we are somebody. That's one of our descriptions. We learn that we're an individual somebody and that our body is this shape right here. And that this is our body, and within it are all the bodily fluids, body and blood. That's what we learn about ourselves. We learn that that's our body and that our mind is in here. Some of us think our mind is in the head, others in the heart, others don't care, don't know where it is. However, one of the things we all can say is that we are aware. So, you know, when we make this commitment to understanding awareness, we begin to feel a lot better. We begin to see solutions to problems that we never saw before. They can't possibly be seen when we're lost in a sea of erratic mental activity. They just absolutely can't be seen. Choices and decisions, as we all know, that come out of confusion create more confusion. When we see ourselves as this limited structure of a mind-body complex that is isolated from the rest of the basic space of phenomena, then it's almost like engaging in a superstition about who we take ourselves to be. Especially today, it really can't hold up much longer. Most of us have never considered that our body might actually be something beyond the physical mind-body complex. Most of us have never considered that our mind might be something beyond the mind-body complex. But when we use advanced scientific instrumentation and apply it to what our body is, and the elements of the body are broken down, what we see is that all of these elements of what we call our body appear within basic space. They appear within basic space. The body is not a concrete thing. That's something we learn, but it's not a concrete thing. The body is not a concrete thing. And the basic space that is the essence of the body is inseparable from awareness. So we learn that awareness is due to the body, that it's dependent on the body, but actually the body is dependent on awareness. The basic space of all phenomena and awareness are inseparable. All phenomena that occur within the basic space of awareness are equal to awareness and can't be separated from it. So just like sunlight filling space, so too in each perception, there's nothing but awareness and its basic space. That's it. But if we take all these perceptions of the frenetic mental activity of the mind to be something, we just get lost in that forever. The simplicity of getting to know ourselves as we are is that it's through our own direct experience that we do so. Nobody else can manage our mental activity for us. Other people can support us in that, but it's up to us to stay put in awareness. It's really up to us to stay put in awareness. We have to hold ourselves to account for that completely. And we have to form ourselves together as a global human community supporting each other to do so. And this is what the Great Freedom Teaching does. It is a worldwide organization comprised of people from all over the world who have formed a community that is based on technological and communication structures that unify people in awareness. It's another thing that's so important for us to do is to not have any fixed idea of where we're going with this. We don't know. We really don't know. All we can do is commit to awareness as our basis and make our life so much better in doing so. And when we do so, then the fruits in our own life become compelling to others. Other people notice a change in us. Maybe we're not talking about the same things we used to talk about, like all the influences of our life on our psychology or whatever it might be. We've just dropped all that. Those stories are of no interest whatsoever any longer. We begin to feel an indwelling confidence that can only come from being 100% committed to awareness. As we gain more and more familiarity with our awareness, we don't even need to think about exactly who we are as a human being, because the boundaries about what that is are much more amorphous. We can't really see where they are. And this is very important, because when we get familiar with awareness, we begin to see that awareness includes all perceptions of what it means to be human, including our most pivotal perceptions like waking, dreaming, sleeping, birth, life, and death. All those occur within awareness, within all-encompassing awareness. But awareness is not dependent on any of them. Awareness is. It's beyond birth, life, and death. It simply is. There will never be a time when awareness isn't, and there will never be a time when awareness isn't for you. So this is really important. Awareness does not depend on the body and its bodily fluids. So you see, awareness is whether the body and its bodily fluids are or they are not. Awareness isn't dependent on the breath of the body. Awareness, how could awareness be dependent on breath? Awareness, for breath to be, awareness has to supersede it. There would be no, so this is just another perception in awareness, but it's a way that we learn to feel bound by our bodies, trapped by our bodies, imprisoned by our bodies. But I'll tell you what, whether we're breathing or not, whether we're a corpse or not, awareness is. And when we face death, if we do not know this, we're going to be very uncomfortable. Extremely uncomfortable, and everyone around us will be fidgeting too. We won't know what to do, and they won't know what to do either. But if in our lifetime we gain familiarity with awareness, then we can gradually, in a tender way, come to see that awareness really isn't dependent on any of these things, such as body, blood, breathing, bodily fluids. It isn't even dependent on heat or air, the air in the atmosphere or the earth itself. So we can take this idea about the body. The earth is, the body's part of the earth, and the body of the earth is the globe, and its fluids are its waters and all the other things going on, and it has the breath and the air and its atmosphere. But awareness is whether all these things are or not. Like, all the air in the atmosphere could disappear, and the earth could disappear too. Boom, gone. And awareness would still be. So do you see the distinction I'm drawing between a body that's trapped in an isolated flesh suit and one that is expansive, like wide open space? So, you know, this is within each of us. That's the amazing thing. The decisive experience of what I describe on an ongoing basis is within each of us, and there's no one else who can do it for us or experience it. There's no one who can tell us whether we have it or we don't. There's no one who can give it to us or take it away from us. There are people who can, through unerring and direct instruction, introduce us to that awareness so that it's so clear that it's there and so obvious, and show us how to maintain it, stay put in it, find the ease of it, maintain the complete perceptual openness in all experience that is the experience of awareness. But other than that, it's all up to us. And then up to us, too, to surround ourselves with friends who will support us. If we don't do that, we're going to continue to be on a project of, oh, someday I'll be aware, someday I'll be more aware. But right now is of the essence. It's completely of the essence. We, as a human species, we need to hold ourselves to account for who we are. It's a serious matter. That's true for the human species. And for each of us, it's a serious matter. Yet for each of us, too, it's also an adventure. So it's a lot of fun. It's exhilarating because there's just more and more that opens up. And there's more and more possibility that opens up. There's an ageless quality to living that opens up more and more. So all of these conventional descriptions that closet one into a little tiny space of what they could be, they just open up into a life of really magnificent benefit. As we benefit ourselves, we benefit others. Once we tap into awareness as our basis, as the strength within us, as the wisdom ruler, then we really know that that'll work for other people too. And it's so simple. It is so, so simple. And it's also very simple to communicate, just the way I'm communicating it to you now. It's about the direct experience of being human. It has no other adornments. It doesn't have any doctrines. All doctrines are stripped away. Why carry that big heavy load from the past of outmoded ideas about who we are? Leave them all behind. Stand staunch in the wisdom ruler of awareness. Get to know yourself as awareness. And in that, everything you need to know will be revealed. What most people believe is awareness these days isn't awareness. And that is very important, because many people believe that awareness is tied to a certain kind of conduct or way of being, but it isn't at all. It's completely uncontrived in its conduct. The importance of maintaining awareness in the direct encounter with perceptions is that that is the way you prove to yourself that awareness is beyond good and bad, beyond the positive and negative, beyond all descriptions. So to stay tied into any kind of structure, like considering oneself to be an ego, or a psychology, or whatever it might be, is death to awareness. To consider oneself to be tied into any kind of description, subtle or overt, about anything, including about awareness. And, you know, things such as no self, emptiness, no thoughts, or a blissful state of being. Those are just more perceptions. There's no way to think about it, and there's no way to experience it other than in the direct encounter with each perception. So there's no destination. There's no getting there, because perceptions will always be changing. and awareness will be as it is, as that perception.
So it's really just stopping.
Just stopping, that's right. To just rest in awareness, completely rest in awareness, be in at ease in the complete perceptual openness of awareness, not needing to take up residence anywhere. Bliss, clarity, non-conceptual states, good feelings in the body. Awareness isn't dependent on any of that. When we speak about something like non-duality, that is true non-duality, the non-duality in which everything is equal. So all descriptions are equal in awareness. They're all absolutely equal. It's in wisdom, the wisdom awareness itself, that knowledge is found of what the best course of action can be for oneself and for others, not in the descriptions. And the only way that can be known is to come to a complete stop in the direct encounter with all perceptions for short moments repeated many times. So not a contrived thing of doing something in particular to make that happen, but just in the flow of life. It's a lot easier than holding up the whole superstructure of descriptions. Much easier. Just stay put in awareness and all that naturally dissipates. All perceptions, no matter what they are already originally pure. If you stay put in awareness, more and more there's an indwelling confidence and certainty that develops where you no longer question yourself about your conduct. Get to know yourself. Keep the focus on yourself. The prison of other people's descriptions about our lives is so confining. And especially within the conventional ways of human beings relating to each other, which is, as we can see in the world, extremely unkind. So whatever's playing out on the world level between nations is also playing out within us and within our most intimate relationships, exactly the same thing, or it wouldn't be happening on the world level. To maintain awareness in the face of everything that's going on, what we come to see, well, I can tell you about my own experience, is that there are some people who will always like us no matter what we do. There are some people who always won't like us no matter what we do. And the rest really don't care and don't think about us. So we could say that 2% of the people we know will like us no matter what we do. 2% won't like us no matter what we do, and then the rest won't think about us. So this is just general practical advice. So to spend our time taking ourselves to be someone who is someone based upon the people who don't like us or do like us is just a waste of a human life. It's a complete waste. And then, you know, once we're resting in awareness, we just see everything so much more clearly. We see that it's impossible to be non-harming because there will always be people who feel harmed by us. No matter what our intention may be, our intent, the other people's response we have no control over. And then we can see that even someone like the Dalai Lama, although he is revered by many people, there are as many people or more who think that he's harmful to society. So harmful to society that they'd invade his country and murder hundreds of thousands of people, destroy monasteries, burn books. So you see, to base our, who we take ourselves to be on other people's idea about us, is it'll give us a life that is filled with regret and sadness. We can't depend on anyone to define who we are. Not on anyone. When we grow up, a lot of times in conventional thinking, we grow up in kind of a fantasy world that we're growing up, we're gonna get together with a romantic partner and that's gonna make everything wonderful. Then we get together with that romantic partner and pretty soon we see, oh, this isn't gonna make everything wonderful like I thought. So let's have some children now. That'll make everything wonderful. So then the child comes along, but that doesn't make things wonderful either. There's just more and more work to do and more involvement in conventional ways of thinking, just hoping that these people in our lives can provide some kind of comfort to us. But to base our lives on finding comfort in people who are outside ourselves it will never lead to anything worthwhile. It never will, because it can't happen. It can only happen within us. Then it doesn't matter what other people are doing. We'll find a way to act powerfully and effectively within that circumstance, whatever it is. Now, I see this all the time because I work with so many people from so many different places, and it's really an honor and a privilege for me to do so. But I see people like this one sitting right here who, and many others, where when they were first exposed to the idea that there was something about them that was extremely powerful, that they could really tap into and live life in a much different way, it seemed unbelievable. Wouldn't you say that's true? Yeah. And just the lack of power that people see in themselves because of these conventional ways of thinking. But then I see the people, whether they're young or old, overcome being ruled by, imprisoned by all these descriptions they've had about themselves. And they just come into flourishing leadership in every aspect of their lives. Just flourishing leadership. And more of it as time passes. So it's not something that ever dwindles or there's any falling back from. And there's great mastery. Like when I met Heather, in our first meeting, she said, oh, well, I'm going to Australia for a month. And I said, okay, well, we can email. She said, oh, no, I don't use computers or email. And I said, well, you know, if you want to have a relationship with me, then you'll need to learn how to use those. Because that's one of the main ways I communicate. So now she is like a master of computers. And, well, also when we go to India, she sets up our whole technology setup there, which is much more difficult to do than it is here. And, you know, gets us broadband access and all our computers networked, our whole printing operation set up, because we have so many more people who come there. Way more than here. And you know, just also her flourishing leadership in the Great Freedom Community, being a Great Freedom teacher, teaching people through teleconferencing worldwide, and also through meeting with people worldwide in different teaching settings. And all of these sorts of things that just didn't seem at all possible. Because, you know, we don't, within conventional thinking, we don't have people saying to us, you have an opportunity to be a world leader. You have an opportunity to not just influence the people in your family or your immediate sphere or school, but you have a world leader within you. You have someone within you who can make a marked difference in an area that's important to you. Not just a little bit of difference, like some volunteer work, but a difference that is so powerful that everyone will notice and it cannot be denied. So I'm talking about something totally practical. And lots of things come up, but they don't come up with the same importance that they once did. You know, there's no way that we can tell our kids anything. The only thing we have to tell our kids is our own example. That's it. Talking, that does nothing. But our own example is all. And, you know, all the practical things about life, they just are what they are. But they're definitely, they are things that take care of themselves. There's plenty of time, there's plenty of money, there's plenty of love. There just is. But if we have a subtle notion there isn't enough time, there isn't enough money, there isn't enough love, then our whole life will be ruled by that. So to stay put in awareness, we find that there is an abundance of all of this that we need. It just isn't in the same place where we thought it was. A lot of times people have a question in their mind, well, can this awareness, can it really be permanent for me? Is that possible? In other words, will I maintain that awareness all day long without even trying to do so? And that's a good thing to remind oneself of, that it already is permanent. So it's already accomplished, and in maintaining it, it becomes more obvious. It's just that when it's ignored, it's in the background. But when it's paid attention to, acknowledged, it's in the foreground. It becomes more and more in the foreground through an entirely organic process. I marvel every day at the profound freedom in my life, the complete freedom from all concern whatsoever, and the complete freedom from a problem-centered identity, the complete freedom from the descriptions of what other people may think about me or what I'm doing. So, you know, it's incredible. It's totally incredible. And it's just more so all the time. So there's just more and more intensification of awareness, no matter how long one lives. Yet at the same time, this that is so clear in me and is so easy to introduce other people to and bring them into permanent familiarity with, that is so easy, is ignored by so many. So what do you say about that? Because then you're walking around totally free and unburdened with no suffering whatsoever, no matter what comes down. And then you see many, many other people totally burdened by suffering that's easily relieved. So what do you say about that? You know, you just, there's nothing to say. It's the basic space of awareness just is as it is. All of the manifestations of awareness are as they are, whatever they are. And as long as there are any manifestations within awareness that don't acknowledge awareness, then there will be other manifestations to tell those manifestations about awareness. Yeah, so it's amazing. It's really amazing. And it's an amazing time in which we live, because for the first time, these kinds of teachings can be communicated in such a way that it's very easy for people to get it. Basic space isn't owned by anyone. The basic space of awareness is not owned by anyone. It is not owned by any tradition, sect, cleric, authority, book. It's not owned by anyone. It's completely free and wide open. No one can confer it and no one can take it away. And to lock ourselves into the idea that that is so is just a desperate situation. It's really time for awareness to be out of the closet and to demand that it be open in its easeful, rightful way to everyone, and no longer be weighed down by liturgical concerns and systems of ownership that are hierarchical, totally antiquated, completely gender biased, that are not life nurturing or fulfilling in any way. Awareness has the power to solve every problem facing the world. The wisdom ruler of awareness in each person. There are the solutions to the world's problems, but we have to take that up. You can see that, you know, there are lots of teachings that talk about awareness, but real awareness is so powerful to act. Real awareness would not have countries where there are no people to eat food. Yeah, to find enough food to eat. That just wouldn't happen. That's not real awareness. So it's time to go beyond all that. To go beyond all the superstitions about what awareness is. And to claim the true authority of awareness, which is humankind. It's not locked up in any sect or tradition. Today, humankind is globally interconnected. We can easily communicate with each other, transport ourselves to see each other. And to have awareness locked up in these traditional forms where it's kind of doled out to a couple of people a century. It's insane. It's completely insane. It's totally insane. And to buy into the texts and descriptions and antiquated, mysterious, unapproachable, inaccessible ways of doling it out, it's silly. So I laugh about things like that. You know, like, why is all this information here, but no one can get a hold of it? So, you know, but it's not just a thought to me.
Right.
It's a worldwide movement.
Right.
So that's the difference between conventional thinking and the wisdom body. The conventional body in mind, there are a lot of good ideas, but no capacity to act on it.
Maybe people need to go through all those hoops before they can stop. Like, I've had to read a lot before I got it, that every single one of those texts said stop in the first two sentences.
Mm-hmm.
They all say stop.
They all say stop, but none of them really say how to stop. In authentic teachings, very specific key points and pivotal instructions are given on how to stop. If a text does not have specific key points and pivotal instructions about how to stop, it is not an authentic teaching. It is a talk on a topic, but it is not an authentic direct teaching. So see, this is another very key distinction. Now, I have read every text, esoteric, commonly available, for 25 years, night and day, I spend looking at all of the world's texts. And there are very, very few direct and authentic teachings that give unerring instruction on how to realize awareness. There's a lot of stuff to read, but you know, there's only one practice that is necessary. You know, when I'm in India, there are all kinds of people that come to the meetings. There are gurus, swamis, lots of people from ashrams, monasteries, sadhus, people from the West, Indians, all kinds of people. And most people have never really heard a direct teaching. So even though they may be steeped in Vedanta or whatever it is, they've never heard a direct teaching. And the Indians come and they say, this teaching came from India. Why can't we find anyone in India who can give it to us? We have to come to a woman from California in order to get the teaching that came out of India, because it's not available. So in the past 25 years, what I've seen is that there are many, many beautiful texts, and many of these texts suggest methods and practices. And those are for people who can't get beyond concepts. So those are for people who cannot get beyond the conventional mind-body complex, who feel that there's someone who needs to be doing something in order to get somewhere, called a destination. And most of the texts written are about that. But there are texts that are totally unerring in their instruction, completely unerring in their instruction. Those texts were developed within very specific cultural settings. And to people outside those cultural settings, the texts are largely meaningless, even if they're translated into English, because there are so many words that are not translatable. Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya, Rupakaya, Vajrakaya, on and on and on and on. Dharmadhatu. Well, people just don't know what any of those things mean, and they certainly don't know what it means in terms of their own direct experience. So these texts have been handed down throughout time. They are for the benefit of all beings. They belong to awareness. They came right out of awareness. They don't belong to any culture or any person. Now, in the lineage of timeless awareness that stretches like a range of golden mountains throughout time, it's been up to people in any given generation to take those teachings and communicate them in a way that is directly understood during that time. That is what the key is, and that's what the Great Freedom Teaching is, and that's why we have gurus and swamis who come to the Great Freedom Teaching, because they've never had the direct teaching. They've only had all the other teachings that talk about neutralizing perceptions through different practices, but neutralization of perceptions is all within the conventional mode of mind. It has nothing to do with going beyond mind. So this is a question that I'm asked a lot, because, you know, in India, there are people coming who practice every moment they're awake, and some of them 24 hours a day. They're sitting in meditation 24 hours a day, or doing yoga, or, you know, playing a sacred instrument. Their entire day is that. So people who are totally fiercely committed to a course of action which they feel is to tame the body-mind complex in order to reach a destination called enlightenment. But the enlightenment that timeless awareness already is does not require any methods or practices. It's naturally present. But that requires that everything be dropped. And like I say to everyone who comes, you can go, you don't have to change anything. Go back to your ashram, go back to your monastery, live as a sadhu out on the street begging. Live however you want to live. Just maintain awareness while you're doing it. Unless you're maintaining awareness while you're involved in mantra repetition or doing yoga or whatever it is, then there won't be any awareness. But the mantra repetition and the yoga are non-different from being a software engineer. You see, these activities are completely non-different. There isn't one that gives you a greater opportunity of maintaining awareness than the other. Awareness is freedom in immediate perception. So in the direct encounter with perception, there is total freedom. That's all it is. And that is the only practice that's required. So it's like the yoga to end all yogas. It's ultimate yoga. It's the ultimate mantra. Timeless awareness is the ultimate mantra. The basic space of awareness is the ultimate metaphor. There's no mystery in it. There's absolutely no mystery in it. There's just the adventure of all these amazing perceptions. What completely resolves perceptions is that they resolve in their own basic space of awareness. In that, all the faults are exhausted and the qualities are perfected. They can't be perfected in any other way. If all these methods and practices legitimately led anywhere, then there would have been a lot of people who reached that place. But as we know, there are almost none. So there's only one means by which hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have realized timeless awareness. Only one tradition among all the traditions of humankind. Only one. It's Dzogchen. You have to know which teachings of Dzogchen. There are 6,400,000 tantra. So you have to know which of those tantra are the direct instructions. Then you have to find somebody who's willing to give you the teachings. And that's what the Great Freedom Teaching is. It is those. But it's so distilled, it's so condensed, it's so completely unerring that it always works. And it's free, you know, it's not bound by any dusty monastery shelves. People who want to practice and stay wrapped up in concepts will do that. But, you know, the people who have written tantra throughout time, including right now in this room, every single one of them say exactly the same thing. When they get to the point where they're writing direct instruction that's so totally unerring that people are freeing up right and left, they say, whatever I did before was meaningless. I was on the wrong path. They say, all the methods and practices I did were unnecessary. The mantras were unnecessary. There is no reincarnation. There is no karma. Meditation is unnecessary. Throw away your meditation cushion. The other thing that we all say, all teachers who have taught this throughout time, is that it's only for people who can move beyond concepts, for people who need to stay within concepts of practices, of methods that lead to a destination, who see someone going somewhere. They're not for those people because those people aren't open to them. So, you know, it just is whatever it is. If your friend is truly open to that which he seeks, truly open, like 100% open with all of his heart, then he'll end up in a circumstance where he'll hear that, and there'll be nothing that can keep him out of that. But if he's more committed to his practices and other parts of his life that are ways that he can escape perceptions, then, you know, that'll be what he's committed to. It's always been that way. This time is no different. It's absolutely no different. The ones who are completely open are the ones who say, I'm done. I'm completely done with everything. I just want the simple, direct approach. If you teach me, I'll listen. So, you know, that's the way it's always been. And all the tantras say that, at least the tantra that are the direct transmission category tantra. They all say that. So, but I know those have never been translated into English, so I know nobody here is reading them. We have a teaching called Pure Space. I just finished a 22-day retreat. People came from all over. And it is of the same ilk. It's just meant for this time. You know, there is nothing to do. But especially in the U.S., we learn to do. There's so much doing to be done, and there's someone to do it. So to say, okay, you know, I really believe there is no doer and no one to do anything, I want to find out about that, is it's an adventure. It's an incredible adventure. It's such an incredible adventure. There's nothing to take comfort in. It's just like there is no text to take comfort in. There's no practice to take comfort in. There's no special bodily posture to take comfort in. All postures of the body are the ultimate yoga, no matter what they are. All postures of the body are already timelessly free in a totally uncontrived way. No matter what it is we're doing with our bodies. All of our speech already is timelessly free, no matter what we're speaking. All of our thinking is already timelessly free, no matter what we're thinking. There aren't special thoughts to have, or special speech to have, or special bodily motions to have. Everything, no matter what it is already uncontrived freedom. Completely uncontrived freedom. There isn't a destination either. There's no enlightenment to look for. Enlightenment and to couch it in ancient terms, enlightenment and samsara are non-different. They're completely non-different. To hold to either samsara or enlightenment is totally futile and fruitless. To have either samsara or enlightenment as a destination is completely fruitless. You already know that. You're lucky. There is no enlightenment to have. Enlightenment is just another perception. There's only timeless awareness that is so obvious, that is so clearly evident, that absolutely cannot be denied, no matter what word is being spoken, what bodily movement is being engaged in, what thought is being thought about, what emotion or sensation is being had. All of it is timelessly free. That's real freedom. If they want to steep themselves in text, that's what they'll get. If they want to think that they have to do something in a special way to be free, then that's what they'll get. It's the wish-fulfilling gem. It gives all wishes. It gives all wishes as a matter of course. Its wishes are guaranteed.